Drive Time 91.3. Always on the cutting edge. 91.3, welcome back to the show. Swaziland, a country in our midst, assumes the chairmanship of the South African Development Community, or SADC, for the first time ever this week, despite protest from within Swaziland and abroad that the small monarchy is not fit to chair the organization. The charter of SADC is clear that member states should observe basic human rights, such as the right to strike, the right to gender equality, and one of the main objectives of the SADC Charter is to support regional integration built on democratic principles, something that SADC's new chair, Swaziland, clearly does not embrace. Online is Peter Kenworthy, sociologist and journalist who writes for Africa Contact in Denmark. Peter Kenworthy, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
It is with some concern and many raised eyebrows that Swaziland takes a chair of SADC, isn't it? Swaziland, compared to Botswana, who was the previous chair, quite a contrast.
Yes, I would say so. I mean, if you look at, for instance, the ranking of Swaziland by American research NGO Freedom House, they're ranked amongst, firstly, one of the least free countries of the 15 SADC members. And for political rights, they get the worst ranking, which is the same as the ranking of Saudi Arabia, Sudan. So it's sort of a strange choice. Yes, I agree.
Do you think Swaziland will be able to bring anything to the table? Because stories that we've been covering coming from within Swaziland point to a country that every now and again has to be rescued financially by South Africa.
Yes, well, I mean, Swaziland is very much reliant on South Africa. I mean, I think about 90% of their imports and 70% of their exports is with South Africa. I think for the king, it's a sort of a more of a public relations event of showing off his country as being peaceful. Than anything else.
And of course, I mean, if one looks at the records of the king, Mswati, and of course his other behaviours, it's not exactly reassuring, is it?
I mean, no. I mean, if you look at Swaziland at the moment, as with South Africa, the drought at the moment has hit Swaziland particularly hard. I mean, you've got people starting to die of starvation. You've got tens of thousands of cattle dying, etc. And at the same time, of course, Mswati is spending millions of rand on holding this SADC summit, whilst the money that was earmarked for drought relief, a lot of it hasn't been sent to the people who need it the most. So, yes.
What is this going to do for the credibility of SADC? It must be frustrating for countries like Botswana, who have, to all intents and purposes, played the game to the letter.
I think some of the main complaints and concerns about the fact that Swaziland is taking over from Botswana as in the chairmanship of SADC has come from Botswana. I mean, political leaders, party leaders in Botswana have called Mswati a dictator and generally said that it is a matter of great concern for them because Swaziland basically hasn't embraced the values of democracy and the values that SADC are based on.
In fact, just quickly to go back, you know, you said that King Mswati spent a lot of money on the summit. He spent something like 40 million rand. In dollar terms, that may not sound a lot, but in our part of the world, 40 million rand can go a long, long way in helping people who are suffering from starvation.
Absolutely, absolutely. And of course, this is not the only thing he's spending money on. I mean, his wives have just been on yet another trip that's cost millions of rand to the taxpayers. He's bought a new personal jet. And of course, generally treats the Treasury as his sort of personal purse almost. And of course, basically, this goes back to Swaziland not being a democracy. The fact that King Nswati is an absolute monarch. He appoints the government. He appoints the prime minister. He appoints part of the parliament, most of the senate, and he generally controls the judiciary and controls the economy of Swaziland. So I mean, that's an important part of the fact that money's been spent on a summit. And not on drought relief for people who are starting to die of starvation.
Do you think neighbouring South Africa should start to be a little bit more proactive in making demands on Swaziland? Because very often the money that King Mswati is spending is money that's been bankrolled by us who are the taxpayers.
Absolutely. South African governments often give sort of statements, but of course, talk is cheap, and not a lot of action has come out of that. Yes, I think they should do. I mean, obviously, because Swaziland is basically dependent on South Africa because of the imports that are basically all with South Africa. So yes, South Africa could and should pressurise, and I think if they did so, they will, as the democratic movement in Swaziland asked for. I mean, I think it could go a long way to bringing democracy to Swaziland.
Do you think that part of the problem we're discussing here is that Swaziland, like another country called Lesotho, which is in our midst, that we're dealing here with colonial relics that somehow have managed to survive into the 21st century, and as such, they are just by their very nature dysfunctional beasts?
Yeah, I mean, of course, the constitution of Swaziland, as it was with most other colonies, of course, was written in part by the colonial power, and of course, at independence in 1968, Swaziland's monarchy had a lot of power. Of course, not enough, because when the opposition party to the royal party gained a couple of seats in the 1973 election, of course, King Nswati's father, Sobhuza, went ahead and banned political parties and basically started ruling by decree. So yes, I think obviously colonialism has a part to play here, but definitely a lot of the fault is also in the fact that the present king is basically treating Swaziland's coffers and political system as his own sort of plaything.
Yeah, it is really very, very disturbing, to say the least. And of course, the fact that King Mswati, in a sense, should know better, because he was sent overseas to be educated, so he should know exactly how a democracy works. I believe he was educated in England, which is a functioning functioning democratic state.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he obviously hasn't learned a lot from that experience, I would say. But I think it's clear to see that he doesn't tolerate dissent. I mean, he's just held this so-called People's Parliament, Sibaya, which is supposedly the highest instance of Swazi sort of law, and it's in the constitution, Swazi constitution, and people can sort of in theory vent their frustrations. But the last time they held that in 2002, people stood up and said, "We don't want the prime minister. He's not democratic. We want multi-party. We want to have to talk about multi-party democracy." Nothing really happened. And since then, I mean, you've had all the people who protest, such as Mario Masuku for Fadimu, Maxwell Dlamini, Becky Dlamini, etc., have been thrown into prison for years for trumped-up charges on so-called terrorism, which then turn out to fall apart once these charges reach court a couple of years later or whatever.
How does this play out internationally, the fact that SADC has got such a man leading such a country at its helm? It can't do much good for the credibility of SADC, which right now needs all the business it can get.
No. I mean, but it doesn't seem to. I mean, as of course is the case in most countries, of course, such is not sort of headline news exactly in Denmark where I live or in England.
Mm-hmm.
I think so. So, and then that's part of the problem is that Swaziland, because it's such a small country, doesn't really get much news headlines in countries such as mine or in Europe. Only when, for instance, Mswati visits a royal head or goes to a royal wedding, you sort of get a couple of sort of almost silly stories about how many wives he has or things like that. But not often concrete enough and political enough.
Yeah, this seems to be the the lot of journalism nowadays. I suppose that there's so many stories going on that need attention, and
yeah.
Some are just to put it bluntly, are going to be more sexier than others. They're going to get the headlines,
yeah.
And others aren't. And unfortunately, Swaziland is always going to be a Cinderella when it comes to getting banner headlines.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this is a small country, and I suppose it doesn't have a strategic interest like other countries. And of course, there's not a war going on. It's sort of, and that's what the king likes to promote is, and what he will be promoting in the Salic, during the Salic Summit, I expect is that this is a peaceful country and people abide by me and they want me as a monarch, etc. Yes.
A final question, looking at the whole scenario that we are discussing. Do you think that Swaziland is going to be able to make any kind of contribution to SADC during its time of being in the chair?
Well, I mean, that depends on the definition of contribution. But if we're talking about contributions to the core values of SADC, which is the right, such as right to strike, gender equality, human rights, democracy, etc., I can't really see how they can, given how strikers are treated in Swaziland, given the lack of gender equality, given the total lack of democracy in the country, I really don't see how Swaziland can play a positive part as SADC chair.
Peter Kenworthy, sociologist and journalist, he writes for Africa Contact in Denmark, chatting to us about the fact that Swaziland has now assumed the chairmanship of the South African Development Community, SADC, but it's going against the grain on democratic principles and all the other principles for which SADC is supposed to stand. Peter Kenworthy, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Drive Time 91.3, always on the cutting edge.